Hello, hello everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Palace Way podcast. It's been a while. It's probably too late for me to be saying Happy New Year, but very much good to be back covering for Bruno. And we have a very, very special face returning. Pat, it's been a while. You've been on your winter break out in sunny California, I believe. So just first of all, big welcome back. And yeah, tell us all about your Christmas, all about your winter break.
Yeah, thanks. Glad to be back. Always a pleasure to be on with you guys. Took a little unwinding time, went to Northern California, away from the wildfires and stuff. My prayers and thoughts out for the people suffering with that, man. Still been a lot of damage and a lot of suffering down there. But for us, we're in Northern California, a little more picturesque at the moment, a little more mountainous. So not as much as those wildfires. And got to see Yosemite National Park, which is a big thing for us Americans going to our national parks. And got to see a nice, lovely wedding. So good reset. Glad to be back and ready to talk Palace.
Rested, ready to rave, all that jazz, double service regimes. Yeah, likewise, thoughts to anyone in California. And we do have a few listeners out there too, so I particularly hope that our listeners are all safe and sound. Speaking of normal service regimes, a veteran of the Palace Way pod returns, our former editor and sports journalist for the New Shopper, Bobby Manzi. Welcome back, mate.
Hello, hello. How are we all?
Walking on sunshine. How are you, my friend?
Yeah, not bad. Lots of games of football to get tucked into at the minute. I've been keeping track of how many games I'm going to watch in 2025, like a little nerdy thing that I want to do, both in person and on the telly. And I'm at 15 at the minute, in 13 days in the calendar year.
Jesus.
So yeah, it's quite concerning. I need to get some hobbies. But yeah, I've enjoyed it. I've been learning to turn my phone off actually in the new year of an evening and just trying to switch off. So if I sit down to watch a game of football that I'm not covering, and I'll just turn my phone off for the 2 hours of that and chill for the rest of the evening.
Good way to be. You've got to guard your peace. As you said, busy, busy, busy times. Games against Chelsea that we haven't actually covered. We won't spend too much time on that because it's just simply not as recent. We obviously had a very, very successful cup tie against Stockport to start a potentially successful cup run. Bit more on that later. But first, let's just talk about Chelsea. I mean, the main issue will always obviously be transfers. That's what we're all here for. I think there's a lot of buzz at the moment about Romain Eze. Again, plenty more on that later, but let's just start at the top. So, Chelsea. Bobby, let's bring you in. I mean, obviously a 1-1 draw, very spirited performance, good Mateta goal. Richards turns like a double-decker bus. I mean, there's a lot to unpack here. So, you know, we don't want to spend too much time on Chelsea, but what were your overall points that you picked out from the game that you really wanted to pick on?
Yeah, it was a good point. I think I led in my post-match piece on the 4th of Jan with something along the lines of Palace turned the page on 2024, filled with hope and optimism. And then Saturday's impressive second half really validated that buoyancy. And I think that was, if I don't say so myself, quite a good way to put it. I thought in the first half, Palace were poor. But then once they got those diagonal balls moving from left to right, they massively improved. And Richards was obviously rinsed by Sancho for the opener. Eze with big misses again in the second half. But as I say, I thought Palace did really well in the second half. Chelsea had chances to seal the game, win by a few goals, particularly in the first half. But in that second half, Palace were the better side, I thought. Daniel Mad Dog Munoz, as Adam Sells put it in a piece a little while back, was magnificent again. Even when defending, he was attacking. For the leveller, he won the ball in an extremely high area. Played it off to Sarr, who did that excellent slot to Eze, who shifted it right sensibly to play Mateta in to win the game. Oh, sorry, to level the game up. And yeah, I just thought that second half performance was very, very good. First half, as I'd already mentioned, a tad disappointing, but it comes back to Glasner's in-game management and the way he changed that performance and the way he got them playing in the second half. And I thought it was a really well-deserved point.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I can't remember the last time we went unbeaten against Chelsea, a home and away. I mean, it must have been years, probably pushing 10. Pat, have you... Yeah, go on.
I think it was over 10 years that Palace had even got two results in a row against Chelsea. So yeah, to go unbeaten in a season against them, it must be pushing at least 15.
Nice territory. It was like a bonus. Pat, just want to bring you in. Have you got anything else to add about the Chelsea game?
I'll just echo very much a tale of two halves. And really, you could almost see this change start around like minute 30 of the first half. It was almost 30 minutes to 60 minutes where we started to play a lot better. And it all starts from the back line. If we have an organized back line, we can start to do things moving forward because They're so integral in, playing those progressive balls, getting between the lines to the midfielders and allowing us to play. I mean, Chelsea's got a lot of talent. That's what happens when you got a lot of money to spend. If you give a team with a lot of talent that much time on the ball, like we did in the first 30, 35 minutes of the match, they're going to create chances. And that first goal, I think it was more of a just an issue with consistency and cohesion and Richards not being out very often in that back line. Because, yeah, Richards got beat by Sancho, but you know what? Munoz was right there ready to cover for it. And if Munoz covers for it, everybody stays in their positioning and that goal probably doesn't happen. But instead, what happens is Lacroix decides to really overcompensate, really slid over. And now we got this 3v1 defensive thing because you got Richards and Munoz there. He slides over. Now Gay has to decide whether he wants to stay guarding back post or whether he wants to be in the middle. And he decides to stay back post. There's this huge gap in the middle. And Cole Palmer's a good enough player that he's going to bury that 9 times out of 10. So once we figured out the cohesion and got a little more confidence in it, we were able to press a little higher. We were able to be a little more aggressive in our out of possession framework. And we weren't really allowing Chelsea to just pin the ball around and start being a little more direct. So to Bobby's point, great halftime adjustments, great to instill some confidence in them. And I think it was a very, very fair point for sure.
No, spot on. I mean, like you say, the goal was kind of one of half of Palace's making. I mean, Sancho and Palmer could find space in a single bed with Jabba the Hutt. These are extremely technical players who are just amazing at what they do, but probably a lot of a tactical shift there that really, really changed the game. So a very spirited point, but as promised, we should probably move on because, let's not talk let's not talk for too long about a game that's very much been and gone. I want to talk about a very, very positive start to Palace's cup run. So Bobby, set the scene. Stockport, League One, but very much well drilled. Dave Challoner's team on a real flyer in terms of the more recent history over the last few years. I mean, what were your thoughts with the drop the tie itself, and what were your thoughts with the game overall?
Yeah, I like the tie when it was drawn. There's a bit of colour around it, obviously, with the previous games against Stockport to keep Palace in the Championship. First time the two sides have met in 23 years. When I was doing my research for the game, I found that Dougie Freeman has scored in three consecutive games against Stockport. So I asked Glasner about that in the pre-match press conference, framed the question as he played a vital role for Palace back then when he was scoring the goals. Now he's trying to recruit a goal scorer. What's it like working alongside him? And he gave a really good response to that. But so yeah, it was a nice tie when it was drawn out. And you expect Palace to really turn them over and get through to the fourth round, which just the second time in 6 seasons. But really and truly, the tie itself on the day was quite drab, dull, boring, whatever real downbeat adjective you want to use. Eze took his goal really well after 4 minutes, and you thought you could be in for a really creative and attacking Palace performance, and after that, really, Palace didn't show much. It was controlled. Stockport didn't really threaten Palace too much, but it was just a bit. There was nothing about it. And Ed wrote in his post-match piece, "If you ever wanted a FA Cup tie to show you why replay shouldn't exist, that probably was that, because it would have just been another boring 90 minutes of football." I think it showed the real need for offensive additions and a wing back addition. Obviously, no Tyrick Mitchell meant that Nathaniel Clyne had to play at wing back, and it's something you don't really want to see. He doesn't really offer you much going forwards. Stockport had their moments, but it was pretty comfortable for Palace. I mean, you look at Lerma's miss, Deveni's miss. It could have been a few more at the end, but really and truly, it just wasn't the most exciting performance. And Romain Eze probably would have played if he was at the club, and he's just that kind of player you miss in a game like that. Someone with a bit of flair, a bit of excitement to take the game by the balls and attack a side, and that's what Palace lacked on Sunday. But by all means, a good result into the hat for the next round. Drawn Doncaster, another favourable tie, and hopefully Palace can get to the fifth round of the FA Cup.
Yeah, definitely spot on. I mean, I've mentioned before, I'm going to get it in early on. I live in Manchester, so I actually go to county games when I can. I ran to Ashley Park the other day as part of training. And yeah, I mean, it's a club I've got a lot of time for. So I was, like you, particularly pleased with the draw. I would have personally liked to have gone away. I think Ashley Park is a fantastic old school ground, but behind the sort of veneer of a very old school stadium is a very modern club, one that's got a very good fan experience as well. So it is a shame, but then there's nothing wrong with a roaring crowd behind the team at Selhurst. So very happy with the tie, the performance, like you say, hit and miss, but plenty of positives to take still. One big positive was the return of Chally Riad, and I'm keen to get both of your thoughts on this, really. He had a really, really strong game compared to what we saw against West Ham all those games ago. I mean, Pat, I'll bring you in first. I mean, what did Chally Riad really bring for you in that game?
There's definitely a lot of rust on him that he needs to shake off, which is completely understandable. And not only is he trying to get back to match shape and match fitness, but he's doing it in a league where he really has little to no experience in. So he's learning on the fly and learning to become healthy again. Passing range, you can see what he's about. You can see that he has a pretty skillful passing tree in his locker. But especially with the physicality, he just looked a step too slow, and maybe like he needed to adjust. And remember, this is a League Two side, or League One? Were they League One?
League one now, but yeah.
League One, yes, they were just promoted. Correct me, pardon me there. But yeah, so a third division side where he should be ahead of the game physically with them, and he really wasn't. Gahey and Richards combined for 12 and 16 in their duels, both aerial and ground duels. So 12 for 16, really well, 75%. My math is right there. And Chady Riad was 2 for 8, so he was just very much the weak point in terms of being physical in that back line. And a lot of that stuff's going to come up to speed when he gets more match minutes and he gets more playing time. But it is something to keep note of and something to watch as he progresses there. Technically, I think he's a very skillful player, as we've said, but he's going to have to come up with that physical side, especially not having much experience playing in England in that different style.
Yeah, definitely. I'm actually on the theme of centre halves and linking that back to both Chelsea and going forward of our little transfer segment we'll do. Obviously a lot of noise on another topic about Mark Gahey and Trevor Chalobah in relation to Chelsea. Gahey himself is linked quite closely with a move back to his former club, and a lot of talk about Chalobah as well, who wasn't able to feature against Stockport for what Glasner described as contractual reasons. It's not verbatim, but you get the point. And it does feel like one of the media is hyping up more than the reality. But Bobby, you're our man on the scene. What do you think of the situation? What do you know? And how likely is it that perhaps Trevor Chalobah could be recalled by Chelsea?
Well, look, I'll caveat this with it's 10:36 on Monday, the 13th of January. Alex tells me that this is probably going out on Wednesday morning, so the situation could have vastly changed by then. But my understanding is that Trevor Chalobah could leave Crystal Palace in the January transfer window. I've had a few conversations, and whatever you hear is quite mixed. I don't think anyone knows from any side of the situation, whether you're coming at it from the Chelsea side, the Palace side, or the players side, what actually is going to happen. Chelsea are seriously considering a recall of Trevor Chalobah. Now, whether that is being used to leverage a deal for Mark Gahey or not is open to interpretation. Crystal Palace are concerned that Trevor Chalobah could be called back by Chelsea this month. And everything you hear from the players' camp is very much that Trevor Chalobah wants to remain at Crystal Palace. So you've got a really awkward and difficult situation. I know I'm not giving much away here, but it's also been very difficult to get information on this. Now, if I was a betting man, I would probably say that Trevor Chalobah would remain at Crystal Palace this month. But I do think there is a real possibility that Chelsea could recall him. And I know that totally contradicts each other. But the situation is complicated. It's not straightforward by any means. Obviously, you saw he had to pull out of the starting 11 on Sunday. So yeah, it's just a real strange situation. There's no real clarity to it yet. And hopefully there is some clarity soon, because you don't really want this one going on until the 2nd of February.
No, definitely not. It is deeply concerning, particularly as he's been such a big player, both in front of goal and defensively. I mean, don't get me wrong, he's had his moments, but let's not doubt how good he's been in a Palace shirt. And, I think we'd all hate to see him go. Pat, I mean, just your thoughts as well. I mean, just how big a miss would that be, and how would Palace cope without Trevor Chalobah? What would have to change?
You'd probably see that back three similar to what we saw position wise, with Gahey maybe playing on the right hand side, Riad playing on the left, and Lacroix playing in the middle. That, or you put Richards on the right and you'd keep Gahey on the left. But you'd probably have those two kind of rotations. And Glasner seems like the type of guy that likes to kind of see what sticks and play the hot hand. So we'd probably just go with the three there that has the most cohesion and the most success. But it would probably be one of those two. I wouldn't move Lacroix. I think he's been a stalwart in the middle for us, but you'd probably have to jump those other guys around to kind of fit and see where they want to play.
Yeah, definitely with Lacroix, I think given his recovery pace and his ability to track back and to drive play as well, I think, having him in that central role is just where we've seen him at his best. But, that back three has been so solid all season, and there's a clear chemistry both on and off the pitch there. So I think it's a deeply concerning situation. It looks like Chelsea are quite likely to shift Axel to Sassi. I'm going to assume that will play a role in what happens, but there's so many more factors that I'm sure are at play. Like you said, Bobby, the fortunate truth is no one really knows. And I think we are just going to be left as fans in this lurch, this anxious period until we find out what really happens when the window shuts.
You do raise a really good point with De Sassi, and that will definitely play a part. Now, I don't think Palace is stupid enough for if Chelsea recall him to then accept a swap deal with him and Gueye plus cash. I don't think that's really seems a possibility at the moment. Obviously, things can change, but from what I hear, that's not a possibility at the moment. Now, there are certain factions that do think the vibes are that Chalobah could head back to Chelsea, but as I say, it's all very unclear at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure more will come. I want to move on to something a bit lighter, something far more positive, and that is the what looks like the impending arrival of Romain Eze from arch rivals Millwall, of all places. Palace spending such a great fortune on their own South London academy, only for their rivals to pop up with a gem that they particularly want. So, Bobby, again, you're the man on the scene, if you as it were. You're the expert on all these things. As a journalist, take us through exactly where you think the deal is roughly, and how this has come about and why ultimately we're looking at someone of this profile.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm an expert by any means, but I'll give it a crack. Yeah, no, the deal's progressing really well. It looks like it's one that's going to happen. Palace, very, very pleased to have got it almost done, or to a point of where it looks like it will get done. This evening, we all played Dagenham and Redbridge. SA didn't feature in the squad. Alex Neil said that the deal was progressing really well, so he didn't want to jeopardise that. So yeah, really, really positive signs. And I mean, what a signing. A 19-year-old South London boy, a left-footed attacker who idolises Robben, obviously being left-footed as well, joined Millwall's academy at age under nine. He used to be a ball boy there. End of each season, the academy got to play at the ground, and he saw that as a big step in him, and he always used to work towards wanting to get back there. He's played for England. Throughout the youth levels, it's well documented that Palace have done a lot of groundwork on him. Dougie Freeman, a real prodigious advocate. And yeah, I was doing some research on him, and I found this quote, which I loved. And it kind of sums up how much of a creative player he is. He said that he loves scoring goals and getting assists. I just love to please the fans. As long as they're leaving with a smile on the face, I'm happy. That's my job after all. I like entertaining, flick skills. The more confidence comes, the more you will see my skills. And I mean, that just screams Crystal Palace. He's a perfect player. He's tricky. He'll inject pace and flair into the Palace side, which is what they really missed this season. Direct, good at taking players on, a high ceiling, so really fits the bill of what Palace tried to build with their transfer strategy. He knows where the back of the net with this season alone. He's 3.1 shot creating actions per 90 minutes, 2.3 dribbles completed per 90 minutes. As I'd already mentioned, loves to take players on, find space, be creative. And also another thing that stands out when you look at the numbers is his high defensive work rate. He will always work to win the ball back, which is important in a middling Premier League club. He'll lose the ball quite a bit on the attack, but that's expected with a player of his mould. Creative players are like that. You don't expect them to be perfect every time, but what he will give you is a moment of magic to win you a game. Talking of winning games, he scored two match winners already this season in a fairly average Millwall squad. So if you put him into a relatively decent Premier League side with the likes of Mateta, Eze, Ismaïla Sarr, Adam Wharton, when he comes back around him, you expect him to do well, and he's progressive, and I think that'll really complement the team in a season where they've lacked that player who can take a player on, beat a man, and get a ball into the box. And yeah, so I think it's really, really clever business from Palace. As I just mentioned, I think he'll really complement the side, and I look forward to seeing him in the Palace shirt. Now, I'm not sure whether he's going to come straight in and be a starter. Don't think he will. I think he's going to be that player on the bench that Palace haven't had, who can come on and change the game with 20 minutes to play. But he's a 19-year-old. He's going to need time. He will eventually become a Crystal Palace starter. And obviously the hope is that he will go on to have a few good years at Palace and then be sold for a big fee. But yeah, it's all positive signs, and I mean, what a player to add to the club.
Definitely, I particularly like your touch about defensive work rate because I think, we're all relatively familiar with the sorts of player he is. And I think, Pat, I'll bring you in a minute to go into more detail. But, just the romantic in me is thinking about Olise joining at the same age, a similar profile. I mean, it's huge boots to fill, but we've got to be wary of making these direct comparisons that aren't really fair. But I digress. Pat, let's bring you in. You were speaking with me before the recording today, and you made some really good points about the sort of player that SA is. I mean, the Eze-Ese link up is a fun one to roll off the tongue, but it'll be interesting to hear your thoughts on how the two work together and particularly the sort of player that Eze really is based on that profile.
Yeah, and listen, I'm not gonna sit here and like slander him, so that's not my point in saying anything like this. But for anyone that I've seen this kind of circling on some social media, some kind of even bigger accounts that are comparing him to Michael Olise, stop. They're nowhere near the same player in similarity and style at all. I mean, we can talk about whether the potential's as high. I'm not here for that. You can have that conversation. We can have that. I'm not gonna give you my opinion either way. I think he has high potential for sure. But in terms of the style of player they are nothing alike.
Okay.
Michael Olise was constantly making these just wide range of passes. He could play a progressive ball through the lines. He would find somebody open. He would be able to play a long ball over the top. His short passing game was impeccable. He actually played the most passes out of any midfielder in the entire championship his last year at Reading. No one attempted more passes, and his completion percentage, despite that, was 95th percentile. Michael Olise was a unicorn. He was one of one. Let's just end it there. Okay. Essay has a directness to him, which Crystal Palace supporters will find familiar. He loves taking people on. He does not aid in build up. His passing numbers are low in attempts and low in completion percentages. And that's across the board, whether it's through balls, whether it's short passes, whether it's long passes or anything in between. Just not a passer. One thing he's great at is the final ball. Excellent crosser of the ball. His expected assisted goals are 5 times higher than his assists. And to put that in non-nerd terms, it means that if he was playing with some finishers, if Millwall had a striker or some players that could score the score a goal, he would probably have about 4 to 5 assists right now. He has zero, I believe. I think his XAG is like
He's got one.
0.5. And yeah, so he would be better in those situations. What he does not do well is he does not create for himself well right now. Bobby referenced that shot creating actions is high. It is, but the only thing that it's high off of are dribbling and getting fouled. He's excellent at winning fouls. He's excellent at taking players off the dribble, but he does not give himself shots. Very low in shot attempts, very low in MPXG, and very low in MPXG per shot. So what that means, he doesn't shoot often. When he does shoot, it's not that high of a quality of shot. So he's taking poor quality shots at a low quantity of time. His goals are high because he's doubled his XG value right now. Now, for a player this young, we cannot tease out whether he's just an exceptional finisher, which is going to happen. You look at the best scorers in the world right now, they constantly outperform their XG numbers on a consistent basis. He may be one of those guys. But right now, we have such a small period, much a small sample size, that it could also be that he's on a purple patch. And that once that fades out, these goals are going to drift out too. The good thing, I know I'm getting long-winded, so I'll wrap it up. The good thing here is that he has a lot more pros than cons. Like I said, strong crosser, wins a lot of fouls, very direct, very good take-on ability, excellent defensive work rate, right? He should remind Palace fans a lot of the good version when we're praising him of Jordan Ayew, right? He wins fouls excellently. The ability to contort his body and shape in front of a ball and make somebody foul him and slow the game down is going to remind you of Ayew. The way he gets on those crosses, the way he just has work rate where he's just going to pin his ears back and run like he has an extra lung. All very similar, but a lot more dynamism as you would expect from somebody growing up in the cages in South London. So that's the type of player that we're dealing with here. A direct player that's not going to aid in the buildup, that's not going to play the short passes, but that is going to give you some highlight reels if we're patient with him because, guys, he's exceptionally raw. He's nowhere ready to be playing starting minutes in the Premier League. He's just not. Okay. And that doesn't mean that I don't have faith in this kid. I really am excited that we're going to sign him. But let's just pump the brakes and do what some people did with Franca, where they talked about he's going to win the Ballon d'Or and this kid hasn't even played yet. He has similar ability to when Franca was coming in. Let's hope the injury record's better. But let's pump the brakes on him immediately being this difference maker. Hopefully he is, but he's just extremely, extremely raw right now.
I think you're being really harsh. I think he's I think he's a direct player, and I think it's exactly what Palace have missed this season. So a
mean, I
player
never said that I wouldn't want him, right?
that
I'm just giving you objective data.
he
There's
might
nothing harsh
be
about
a,
it. It's objective.
no, but I do think I do think the interpretation of the data is quite harsh, because Palace have missed a player who can come on, beat a man, be direct, show a little bit of flair this season with 20 minutes to play. And I mean, he's exactly that. He might be raw, but sometimes that fearlessness is what you want from an attacker who's coming on with 20 minutes to play to try and change a game. And
For sure, I never refuted any of that, right? I never said anything of the sort. But let's also have to take
coming.
into account his dual win rate is in like the fourth percentile. He's dispossessed a lot, and of course, flair players are going to be dispossessed a lot. But he loses a lot more than he wins. He's a great dribbler, but he's lightweight. You know, he needs to get a little more physical and get a little bigger. He just needs a little bit more seasoning. I have a lot of faith that he's going to be good, but he's. That's just like I said. Just pump the brakes. I'll gladly be wrong, and I'm not saying he's bad. So if anyone's taking that way, please don't. I have a high potential for this kid. I think I have high expectations for him, but he's not going to jump in even Elise. How long did it take for Elise to come through in the Premier League? 6 months until he started to really show some prowess. And we're dealing with Michael Elise, Bayern world-class player right now. So he's not going to save the day, and that's fine. He doesn't need to. But I'm very excited for what he's got. But yeah, I'm not saying that he's bad by any means. I'm just telling you, that's the type of player he is.
So in Football Manager terms, he's like 1.5, 2-star, but with 5-star potential. That's what we're getting at here. He's not going to come in and just set the Premier League alight, but there is.
Skill moves are like four.
Yeah, more like 4, right? Fine, we'll temper that. You can tell I've just been like wasting my free time outside of work. God. Right, you get the point. You know, he for me, that's a really interesting look at a player that I think is already going to garner these Elise comparisons. And it's like, no. Maybe the potential's there, but this is a different type of player with a different kind of ceiling and a different kind of current ability, so keep it in mind. But I do think, Bobby, you make a good point there, in that I think it's interesting to see how he actually slots into the squad directly in the starting 11 and how he
I
potentially
say
competes.
I think it's a really, really clever addition, and I just think he offers that thing that Palace have lacked all season, really. And that, while I don't expect him to come in and be a world beater, I do think he'll come in and make real positive impact for the second half of the season. And with a manager like Oliver Glasner, he's only going to get better. So yeah, I don't see where any real negative to the addition.
Well,
And
my
I
follow-up.
I do
Yeah.
think he'll come in and make. I do think he'll come in and make an impact for the second half of the season.
No, definitely. What my follow-up question to kind of both of you, really, you can both jump on this. I'll start with you, Bobby. Where does this leave the likes of Sarr and Kamada, even, who are, you know, different kinds of additions, different kind of roles, different kind of players? They, particularly Sarr, who's come into form, and Kamada, who's looked a bit more assured. I mean, does that kind of force them back out the starting 11? Where do you see this kind of this transfer interacting strategically with the squad?
Well, as I said, I think certainly early doors, he's going to be that player who comes on with 20 minutes, half an hour to play to try and change a game when you need that, because Palace have missed that all season. So I don't really think that changes Sarr's role. If anything, it forces Kamada further down the pecking order. But yeah, I still expect Eze and Kamada, sorry, Eze and Sarr to be Palace's starters on the 10 for the moment.
And Pat, just anything to add to that?
Yeah, I don't think it changes anything in terms of those guys. I do think that he's really going to step in for where Jeff Schlupp's getting a little bit of minutes right now. I don't think we're going to be seeing much of Jeff Schlupp anymore because I think he's the one for at the moment he's replacing. Just a change of pace guy that's able to come off off the bench and late and run against tired legs. A much more able version of Schlupp in doing that. You know, Schlupp's obviously getting older. He doesn't have the legs on him. What I do think, though, if I can segue to it, is signing a 19-year-old kid like this for his potential. I do think that it's a maybe possibly, and I'm speculating, so I don't want to act like I know what I'm talking about. I don't have any leads here, but I think that it's a sign that perhaps our brass is fed up with Jesu and Rakitić, and it's going to be time for him to go to another club this summer because this kid's 2.5 years younger. We easily could have just, I know we're calling people on loan's tricky, but we have a kid on loan right now that is left-footed that could do the job probably as good as SA at the moment. And we didn't look that way. So I think if we're reading between the lines a little bit, I think that, you know, maybe he's just been fed up that he wasn't given a chance. He wasn't loaned out last season, and it's going to be an amicable parting of ways between the club and Jez this summer.
So yeah, just to pick up 2 points on what Pat says, I think he does raise a really good point on Jez. But firstly, You don't spend £15 million on an attacker if they're not going to get a lot of minutes in the second half of the season. It just doesn't happen, or more than £15 million is what it's going to be. So yeah, you don't spend that kind of money if you don't expect to see minutes. Also, Glasner's going to be forced to play him in a sense because he can't moan about not having attacking depth for the whole first half of the season, then be provided with that depth and then not use it. So I do think we're going to see a lot of Romain Eze in the second half of the season, which is quite exciting. And on the Jez point, I think it's an excellent point. Glasner has said it himself, in quite brutal terms, actually. Jez either needs to learn our system or not be a part of this squad. He said it a few weeks back when people were questioning about whether he'd be recalled or not. So, yeah, I do think that Jezra Maxaki's future in Oliver Glasner's Crystal Palace has got some big question marks on it.
Definitely, let's not forget Leeds made a what a £12 million bid allegedly in the summer. I mean, there's interest in him, and I'm sure that will continue to remain given his fairly decent championship form and technical ability. He's still very young, but probably just a bit on the older side for where we'd like him to be in his development cycle. So really interesting to see what happens with him. I mean, it's a tantalising prospect, but before we wrap up this transfer segment, we want to talk about a few more deals that kind of didn't really get off the ground. So, Bobby, if you may, I'd just like to bring you in on first of all, Diouf from Slavia Prague, and then Ben Doak as well, where we had a couple of offers, Rebuff from Liverpool.
Yeah, so Diouf, a first offer rejected. I still don't see a world where this transfer doesn't get done in the January transfer window. My understanding is that the player is very, very keen to come to Crystal Palace Football Club. Glasner wants a left wing back to add to his squad. He's spoken about it loosely. He's not said it in those terms, but the understanding is that he wants competition for Tyrick Mitchell. I feel sorry for Ty in a sense because he's not had competition for the entire time he's been at the club, really, or ever since Patrick Van Aanholt left. So he's running on some real tired legs. But yeah, as I say, I think with all the moving parts, I think the deal does get done. Obviously, the only real issues are that Slavia Prague don't need to sell, so they can demand that higher price because they've already sold a goalkeeper this window. And I think, I might be wrong, but I'm sure I read somewhere the other day that one of their midfielders is coming to a Premier League side as well. So they've already taken big money in this window, so there's no real need for them to sell. So Palace are going to have to fall into line in a sense. But with the player so keen on coming to England, it's almost a similar situation to Munoz last season, where the player was just like, I want to go. And eventually it forces the selling club's hand to accept an offer by the end of the window because you can't have unhappy players in the squad. And Ben Doak, I can't see that one happening. Everything turned to essay, really.
Yeah, makes sense. Look, just before we wrap up, I want to make one final point. Fantasy transfers. I did this last time when I spoke to Evan Brack. It was a long time ago. I think it was last January when we, signed Wharton and Munoz and discussed them. So just very quickly, I don't want like an in-depth analysis. I just kind of want your take as to one unlinked player that you think would be a good addition either in January or even the summer. Yeah, Bobby, I'll talk about my pick last, but Bobby, let's hear your take.
Well, I know what you're going to pick, Alex, so I'll choose a slightly different one because I appreciate the need for nuance. And I know you say it can't be linked, but he was linked a bit earlier on in the window.
Yeah,
But
that's fine.
as a real champion of English talent, I don't know if people know this, but I cover England under 21, so I really enjoy following the academy England talents. So I'll go for Manchester City's James McCathie. I just think he's wonderful. He's not had anywhere near enough minutes under Pep Guardiola this season. He's 21 years of age and a great offensive threat, knows where the back of the net is, pulls the strings in that kind of attacking midfield role, and loves an assist too. He scored a hat trick in the FA Cup this weekend. And I mean, he's just a top talent. I've been rambling on Twitter about it for months, as well as Southampton's Kyle Walker-Peters, who I've spoken about for years wanting at Palace, and I think that's who you're going to pick, Alex. So yeah, my pick for nuance would be James McCathie.
You beat me to it. Yeah, Kyle Walker-Peters looks like, I think someone in the Telegraph said he's available for 7 million, but don't quote me on that. They are actually considering selling, which surprised me.
Yeah,
I thought they'd be happy to keep him, but
Southampton need to sell in January if they want a fee for him because he's back in the summer. But yeah, I can't see anyone touching him for 7 million when they can get him for a free deal in the summer.
no,
But
definitely not.
I think you raise a good point with him. I think he's perfect for that Palace system as that left wing back kind of role or the right wing back kind of role because he can play both sides.
Defensively competent, both sides. Yeah, great
And yeah,
option.
really, really
Pat.
good. You saw with his assist against Palace how good he is.
Oh God, yeah, Pat. Just really, really quickly. We've got like 3 minutes. Who is your final pick?
So yeah, Tyrique Mitchell needs some help, right? He hasn't had any backup in forever. And what Tyrique Mitchell does really well is he's very good in the defensive third. He's very good in the final attacking third. He's not good in the middle third. So I was looking at somebody that could complement that we could have a younger player that's not going to demand starter minutes, that can come in that really does a good job with progressive passes, progressive carries, passing into the final third, things that will help us get from the defensive third to the attacking third without having Eze have to drop back like he's been doing a lot more this year and kind of taking away his goal threat because he's further away from goal. So with that said, I looked at Belgium because we've had a lot of success there with Munoz, and there's a player from Westerlo named Ter Ramens, Belgian young player, 22 years old, left-footed. Checks off all the boxes that we talked about. I think he would be a great addition. So check him out. Good little player.
That is a very tidy response, but we'll wrap it up there. Guys, thank you very much for listening. If you're not already doing so, please make sure you're following us on socials at The Palace Way for most socials, I think, except TikTok, where we are Palace The Palace Way Pod, I believe. Bruno will shoot me for that. We'll wrap it up there, but love to see if you haven't checked out the site as well, please do so at thepalaceway.com. Articles, Wardle analysis, and a lot more. I am keeping it very speedy because we are trying to keep this as one of the most succinct episodes we've recorded. But Pat, just while you've got literally a minute, just to thank you for having you on. Glad to have you back with normal service. Hope you had a lovely break. And yeah, just any closing words?
No, just pleasure to be back, and let's hope we can keep this momentum going.
No, definitely, definitely. And Bobby, a pleasure as always, mate. Any final
Cheers,
words?
yeah. Thanks for having me on, and anyone heading to Leicester on Wednesday night, enjoy the game. Big trip ahead.
Yeah, this should be going out hopefully if I could get my arse in gear of editing on the day we actually go to Leicester. That's the intention.
Yeah.
Back to a Wednesday schedule. So, again, safe travels. Hope it's a great result. And again, to all our listeners, stay safe. Thank you for your support and up the Palace.